The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Welcome to The Lawyer's Edge, a program that seeks to answer your questions on civil, criminal, constitutional, and political legal matters with attorneys Robert J. Slama and David Trotty. Robert J. Slama is a U.S. veteran and prominent attorney who has served as counsel for some of Jacksonville's most high-profile cases. Robert Slama is a member of the Florida Bar and the U.S. Supreme Court Bar Associations. He's argued cases in Florida, as well as constitutional cases, before the highest court in the land. David Trotty is a Florida Bar attorney, practicing since 2000, and is a certified civil and family law mediator and a qualified arbitrator in the state of Florida. His practice focuses on family and criminal law issues and mediation. He's a former Marine who served in Japan and the U.S. Embassy in Austria and Tanzania. Also a federal police officer with the Central Intelligence Agency. It's now time to discuss today's legal topics and issues and how they impact your family and small business. Now, live from the WBOB studios, here's attorneys Robert J. Slama and David Trotty.
Good afternoon, Jacksonville, and welcome to The Lawyer's Edge. I'm in the studio with David Trotty, and today I would assume that most people have already heard and otherwise know that there was a shooting that took place down south in Parkland, Florida. That was an event not unlike ones that we have seen before. However, this time, there has been much discussion about all kinds of topics that range from the Second Amendment. We've heard the debates on gun control. We've heard all of the other debates about mental health illness, about how we take schools and we make them stronger, we make them more secure, so on and so forth. Well, coming out of this, I think this time we're going to have in the state of Florida a different discussion because there is a lot going on. And we're going to today take you through, in part, some of the mental health issues and some of the other legal issues, A, to try to give some insight into the chronology of how an event like this happens, where we have people on the mental health side that are struggling. And there is a lot more information that has come out. Also, today, we certainly want to take your calls. We're going to be providing a lot of information. This I want to consider today to be more like a town hall. Please call us, and you can call us at 222-TALK. That's at 222-TALK. I'm giving away a Costco gift certificate or a card for $50. So please give us a ring. Also, I want to give you some information about some of the efforts that we're taking to try to help out down south. I've been in contact with the school, certainly with the ROTC, as well as the guidance, as well as the principal himself, Principal Thompson. As you may know, if you don't know, Peter Wang, who's one of the ROTC students, he was involved, let's say, in some wonderful acts of heroism, including holding open the door, helping other kids get out. He was shot and he was killed. In that regard, he also, there's a petition that's floating around to give him full burial rights as a member of the United States military. So that petition is out, and I'm going to give you information about the petition. We are putting together a banner, and that banner is going to go forward in the community and be provided so everyone will have an opportunity to sign it. That banner is going to be delivered to the ROTC department, and they can take it and do with it what they will in the school or otherwise. We're putting together a scholarship for a student who is selected from the school, but it's going to be in the name of Peter Wang from the JROTC department. So we have a lot of things going on, a lot of things we can do. There is a vigil tonight, which is going to be held throughout Broward County, in four places, and also throughout the state, other people are doing vigils. Now, I've heard it said that a lot of people are tired of the so-called thoughts and prayers. And what do we do? How do we get involved? How do we handle this sort of an event and keep it from happening? Well, I can tell you, and I'm sure David can attest to the same, in 26 years of doing this, I remember when I first started in the public defender's office, and people are lined up when they come in for initial appearance. They have different color uniforms. You've got green, you've got gray, you know, the women wear a certain color, men wear a certain color. Then you've got what they call the pumpkin patch. The pumpkin patch. Those are people in orange jumpsuits. There are people that are in red jumpsuits. Red and orange get treated differently, but orange typically means that there are psychological issues. Whether you realize this or not, as of today, 1 in 7 Americans are on some sort of psychotropic medication, all the way from general anxiety all the way up to whatever, schizophrenia, so on and so forth. I have dealt with my share of parents who oftentimes, not always, but single parents, they have walked the road, as I call it, with someone who has had and started a mental illness. Usually, what precedes it in the teenage years is what we call a psychotic break. In males, it can happen 17, 18, 19, 20. Women, a little bit different. But these events happen. And as you look at the history and you start going into this family, which they already have, and of course, it's what I suspected, because ultimately, when you find these events that come up, this sort of behavior, there's always more of a backstory than what we know. Of course, we focus on the event that happened, but what can we do along the way to try to help the family and ultimately help the person who's going through this? If we get to the person and we're able to handle the problem as the problem is unfolding, it certainly minimizes the risk that a person is going to go out in the street and they're going to do something. I've represented my share of people who have gone into businesses with guns, probably 25% of them with psychological issues, some starting from when they were bullied when they were young and so on and so forth. So the phenomena is not new. It's just as it plays out again, we're asking ourselves questions on what we can do.
Here's a question I've got for you, Robert, and for David. There seems to be a fine line between mentally ill and evil in a lot of cases. And it's tragic because, mentally ill or not, the devastation wrought upon the families who will never see their loved ones alive again on this side of eternity is still a reality they're going to have to live with for the rest of their lives. Is a mental illness a valid defense in the state of Florida?
Well, it can be, and we'll get into that in just a minute because we want to get into the facts and lay out what happened. Where mental illness comes in, whatever word you use, certainly the act evil is what we call, it's a conclusion, it's a branding of the episode. But what it is whether or not the person could control and monitor their behavior to what the law requires. So in other words, before you're guilty by reason of insanity, you have to demonstrate through the psychologist and the experts that you were unable to conform your conduct to what is expected and required by law, so on and so forth. So it tends to go down that road. David?
Well, I think this incident that happened last week, it's terrible. It's a tragedy. It's been repeating itself too much. As we know from the facts, it has not repeated itself 18 times in 2018. I think what we have to do, before we have a clear dialogue and an intelligent dialogue, we have to comb through the facts and make sure the facts are accurate in this situation and previous situations before we leap to conclusions. But let's talk about recognition of mental health issues in the family when we get back.
Sure. Please call us at 222-TALK, 222-TALK. We're here. You have a Costco gift card waiting for the person who calls in with the best question. We are interested in talking to you. Call us at the Lawyer's Edge. David Trotty and I are in the studio live, and we're here for you today. Please call us, 222-TALK. You're listening to A Lawyer's Edge.
A law firm dedicated to helping families. A law firm dedicated to you. The law firm of Robert J. Slama.
Hi, I'm Robert Slama, and I want to be your family's attorney. For over 17 years, I've assisted the Jacksonville community by providing a full-service law firm for families, not the rich and powerful, but for everyday families like yours. Since 1998, I have handled some of the most complicated cases in Jacksonville, including Brenton Butler, and more recently the jury verdict in Jermaine DeBose. Whether it's family law, including divorce, custody, or bankruptcy, juvenile law, personal injury, probate, civil rights, or not-for-profit and churches, I'm dedicated to helping your family with your legal needs. I'm Robert Slama, and I want to be your family's attorney. Call me anytime. My number is 904-296-1050, or you may text me at 838-8607. The law firm of Robert J. Slama.
It's The Lawyer's Edge with Robert J. Slama and David Trotty, attorneys in law, spending Tuesday afternoons with us here on WBOB AM 600 and 101.1 FM. I'm Roger, and our producer, Brian, answering your calls. And Robert, very, very generous today. The best caller of the day gets a $50 Costco gift card. Man, I wish I could call in, but I'm probably precluded, right?
Of course you are.
Big fancy legal term.
But unless you use a phone.
I've got one.
Hey, you use the phone and call in.
I'm probably not qualified.
No, but these are touchy issues that we're
dealing
with.
Yes, they are.
And a lot of people don't want to step into the pumpkin patch. Not any reference to your earlier pumpkin patch, but this pumpkin patch, because it is dicey. We're dealing with sensitive issues, and it doesn't matter what comment you make. You seem to be parting the Red Sea on one side of the political spectrum or the other. And I don't know that we should be making a political statement about this situation, but we should be making a unified front to figure out where does this stuff stem from. Mental health, and I am not qualified to speak about mental health issues. I'm an attorney, a Marine, federal police officer, and a drummer.
CIA agent.
Yeah, well... Not an agent, but I work for them.
Kind of, sort of.
The drummer makes you uniquely qualified to talk about mental health
issues.
Versus trumpet.
I do sometimes go to the beat of my own drum. But, but, you know, aside from that, I have preached this when I was on the campaign trail in 2016 and when I was working on my campaign in 2014. As family lawyers, and as a family judge would have it, we as family lawyers, when we take that initial consultation, we are the front line of early recognition of mental health issues, not only in the parents, and trust me, you can see it in the twinkle of their eyes, what's going on, but not only that, but the impact this divorce situation is going to have on a child, whether it's a teenage child, a toddler, an 8-9-year-old or somebody who's 16, 17 years old about to get out of the house. We as attorneys have a lot of power. And we have probably done more damage, and I'm saying this, we as attorneys have probably done more damage to families and children with a stroke of our pencil, now typewriter, and filing those documents than any gun has done to a family in a school.
I agree with that. I want to add into it, though, in the court system, people fall through the cracks. Now, we're hard on doctors. We're hard on doctors, right? We can tell, or most of the time, an evaluation of what happened if someone commits malpractice in the medical sense. But in the courtroom, oftentimes, as I see this, when it comes to mental health issues, people...
Are we talking about the parents or the children?
I'm talking about either. I'm talking about the litigants. I'm talking about the children. I'm talking about whoever the affected party is.
Well, let's try to focus our conversation for a little bit, maybe during this segment, on the children. Because it's one thing when we have allegations flying about the parents, and we can get psychological evaluations. You know, he's a better parent. She's a better parent. I'm more fit. He's more fit. He's got drug and alcohol issues. He's got other kinds of issues. In any divorce case, every parent can be thrown up on the chalkboard to have some sort of issue. Why? Because more likely than not, they're part of a divorced family or just part of a dysfunctional, intact family.
You just made my point, which is we look for sometimes. I say not. Let's get real. A lot of times, because I sit in there with these judges, and oftentimes I'm amazed at whether we're in the same universe. Which you just did. You look for the least likely thing to explain the behavior that's not related to mental health. So you go like this. Oh, they're good people. They're just having a stressful day. Yeah, let me help you. Stressful day doesn't mean a woman or a man, which I've had, and most of it was a woman, during the divorce, comes up, punches the girlfriend living with the guy in the face, and then in the rain is standing out in the street, standing outside with the kids watching, pacing back and forth in the rain, putting their hands up and going up and down like this. That is one of a thousand behaviors I can describe.
For the record, Robert was waving his hands side by side, up and down.
Up and down, like this. And my point is that oftentimes as you raise the issues, as you know, and this is where I say, when I say let's get real, HIPAA, as well as the privacy laws, a lot of people, again, don't realize this, and I'm glad at the conference we just went through, someone raised it again. You'll have someone who oftentimes, now let's get to the other reason, excuse, why we don't get into mental health issues. Someone says, well, David Trotty's client is just throwing sticks at my client because in the end, it's part of the warfare of divorce, and he just wants to embarrass my client, which is true.
Well, we have to get past, what my point is, we have to get past the warfare. And we have to get, because a lot of times with HIPAA, it's hard to get those documents.
You can't get them at all absent consent or a subpoena.
Absolutely.
And you got to go through privilege and the person fighting through that.
Is there another layer of HIPAA, for lack of a better term, a layer when it comes to a juvenile? Because this guy was showing some very, very strong signs of mental instability when he was still a child, but he still was able to get that AR-15 and pass the background check.
Well, it's the proverbial government entities. No one speaks to the other. Okay, so I apply. Well, if they don't know this gentleman has mental health issues, or those mental health issues aren't reported, because they can't because of HIPAA, okay? If they're not reported to the federal agencies who are doing the thorough background check, and I think that's kind of what some people are saying, is the gun control laws need to be changed. Not so much you can't have a gun. I mean, some people are obviously saying we don't need AR-15s. We don't need these types of weapons in anybody's hands. We don't need any weapons in anybody's hands. I understand the arguments. But
that's political. But listen to what I'm saying. Let's take this kid. Here's what we know. And Roger, what you said isn't even it's not even the icing on the cake yet.
I just can't figure out how he could pass the background check.
No, this, let me give you the facts and then ask that question. DCF was involved in 2016. First, let's get to who this kid is. See, this is what happens in the courthouse, is the same thing. People yet don't know what they're talking about. And we start kicking a ball around, making judgments, and we don't even know what the facts are yet.
And let's make sure we understand. This is 6 days after the yep. event, 6 days, and we're pulling this off of our online sources. So these facts can change from this as well.
The DCF report's not going to change. A 2016 Florida Department of Children and Families says, following a breakup with a girlfriend, Cruz began cutting his arms. He was engaging in the process of cutting. Usually when I've seen that, that's a pretty bad thing. I've had a lot of girls who cut. Not as many boys, but I certainly have had boys. He also announced plans to buy a gun, put racial slurs and hate symbols on his backpack. He suffered from depression, attention deficit hyperactivity, and I'm not saying ADHD is the answer. He's also on the autistic scale. We then later learned his brother also suffered from depression, and that there are allegations that these boys, both of them, have been abused. But listen to this. Despite his behavior, guess what DCF concluded? The risk is low. Now, I've seen my share, and trust me, DCF, there were some people out there who work hard. I've sued DCF. That agency amazes me. Now, hang on. There's an article that you got to read, all of you that are listening, if you haven't read it, because it's called The Lost Children of Florida. It's written by the good folks in Miami.
We can put a link to that book on our website, correct?
No, we will. It's a article that was written by the Miami Herald. I spoke to the lady who wrote it. We have lost in custody. Now think about this. Our DCF, and trust me, Cherish Periwinkle, that case is going on, and I got a lot to say about DCF and what they have done and how they handle the children. Here's essentially what happened, though. The same group that I just read to you to, DCF, they say the risk of violence from this guy is low. Not only did they miss it, when DCF takes a child, they take them, they shelter them, they put them in foster care unless they get alternative relative placement, which is the goal, so they don't have to, quote, shelter the child. Guess how many kids are lost in the system? Thus the article, The Lost Children of Florida. Over 300 children that are lost after they go into DCF's beautiful protective care. here, everyone's talking about the FBI. That's what I said. Talking about gun control, all of this. I'm trying to figure out and still get by how DCF, the facts I just told you, you could look at this guy, the look in his eye, look at the indicators. He is breaking up with a girlfriend. He's going through stress. He's a teenager. He says, I'm going to buy a military-style weapon, on and on and on. And DCF can't figure out that this guy who's autistic, forget ADDH, I'm not talking about that. They can't figure out that there's an issue here of a risk. Now I didn't add to it. The police have been called out to the house. Do you know how many times?
30-something.
Okay. They don't need, DCF in 2016 doesn't mention the amount of times that the, or the number of times that the police were called out to the place. Does any of this yet sound like there's a problem? Now, ordinarily when I have a parent who comes in and we're just starting at the very beginning and they say, I have an adult, I'm dealing with it now. I've been dealing with it with kids over 26 years. The first thing I say to them is, ma'am or sir, let's get real first. Are you ready to give up on this kid or are you ready to stay in there? And I look at him and I can tell you from the look. I don't have to hear the long story. And you know, most of the time what I hear is, and everyone's looking for a way out. And but I'm going to take up for the parents for a moment. They go, Robert, they tell me and recount the long history like this kid, which is not uncommon. If you were to line up all the kids that are like him, I'm not talking about that have shot anyone. I think the world would be surprised to find out that this kid isn't the one in 100 in a straw, okay, in a straw field. This kid, there's lots more of him. So the parent, you know what they say to me? Robert, I've been handling this kid for 6 years, and I have no life. I can't get a boyfriend. He broke up my marriage. I can't stay with him. I can't hang with him. I'm even afraid to go to bed at night. What am I supposed to do? You know what my answer is? They're looking for a place to hand him off at the door and say, Roger, I'm dropping him off like a package at your doorstep. Can't the government take him? So why did they get the criminal justice system involved? When you start in the criminal justice system, the first thing you see is the people who come in and they go, I'm calling the police on my kid and sticking him here because if I put him here, you guys can fix him. Then they realize when we stick him there, what do the prosecutors do, David? They prosecute. They're not here to fix people. They're here to prosecute. So what happens? They find out that the situation they were looking to resolve isn't going to get resolved that way. Then what happens? The kid goes through whatever. He comes out. Now he's back out on the street, back in their place. So I say to the parents, you know what the short answer here is? Whether someone gave up on him or whether someone thought everything was okay, I heard the parents speak today, or yesterday, I should say, and apparently they thought everything was fine and dandy and that he was never happier before this happened.
And these aren't the biological parents.
Not the biological, but I mean
these are
after the mother.
These are two people who took this child in after the biological mother passed away.
Which was another stressor for the kid.
And where was the dad?
Don't know.
Okay.
Don't know where he is.
I don't know what his story is. And that's the point I'm trying to make. I mean, this situation needs to be a case study, and we need to make changes to our system. There are so many children that fall through the cracks because our systems do not speak to each other. I think our DCF, they have some improving to do. I think our court systems, we can improve there as the lawyers and the judges in the courthouse. And the criminal justice system can do. If you really want to rehabilitate some of these children who have mental health issues or adults, we need real systems in place.
We need mental health court. I've been saying that for 26 years. A judge who has experience in mental health issues, and people with mental health issues end up in that courtroom, so you have one person looking at all the litigants and can make referrals and decisions regarding their lives. You're listening to A Lawyer's Edge. Call us at 222-TALK, 222-TALK. We have a Costco gift card waiting for you. Call us. David and I are in the studio ready for you. Call us now.
Welcome back to The Lawyer's Edge with Robert J. Slama and David Trotty. They are attorneys who practice and agree to spend Tuesdays at 2 o'clock with us to talk about legal issues. They are also taking your calls at 904-222-TALK, 904-222-8255. And Robert, for the best caller, This afternoon gets a $50 gift card from Costco. So, hey, it's worth it to call in today. And we're having a very interesting discussion about the tragedy that took place in South Florida last week.
It's a difficult discussion. And you hear Robert and I bantering with each other, which is a healthy banter, because I have one approach to this these situations. And it's not to just analyze and critique what's going on with Mr. Cruz and the terrible situation down south at Parkland. But where can we take steps and measures to fix it, fix the system? The system is broke. And you heard Robert talk about earlier, pounding on the desk, we need mental health courts.
Of course.
Well, we do have a facet of mental health courts, which is the Veterans Court, which deals with issues that veterans face, and it's early recognition. It's a program that puts on for our veterans to work through certain situations and issues that they're facing, to work through the criminal justice system. And we should try to have Charlie Kofor on, the public defender, Charlie Kofor, come in, and his representative from the Veterans Court come in and talk about how successful that program is. And maybe from that program we can establish a mental health court. But there again, we're going to have a highly trained judge or magistrate that – has a proper qualifications, not only as to sit on the judicial bench as a magistrate or a judge, but also have the proper mental health background with the necessary amount of hands-on observations to be able to recognize these things. Because you know what? Relying on some of our experts that we have right now isn't doing the job, is it?
Oh, and it's a problem, because here, like a DCF, Dr. McIntosh, you know, in abuse cases and all, he's the think tank. Let me explain to you how DCF operates, this part of it. You have the case manager who comes out, who is someone, say, someone usually younger from DCF, which who has minimal experience. Most of them don't stay around that long for different reasons. Then you have what's called the CPT, the Child Protective Team. They operate.
Who's the CPT with?
With DCF. Okay. However, they are two parts of a body which don't communicate with each other, because everything the CPT does is typically guarded under law. It can only be released by court order and all this stuff. So what the CPT does is highly confidential. DCF is taking a lot of the basic information, if you want to call it that. I call it the report. They take the report. Then, depending upon the abuse, the indicators, it goes over to the CPT. The CPT does their thing. Then once you get inside the inner workings of DCF, what I call behind the man behind the curtain, they're back there like the Wizard of Oz. You don't talk to them. You don't know who it is who's making the decisions, reading the file. They're not out on the street doing anything, so to speak. They're back in the ivory tower, and they're making decisions. So the person I'm dealing with, these two, is just taking and funneling information and giving it up into the hierarchy of DCF. Then you have, from Jewish Community Services, the case manager who's floating around, who's trying to help and work with referrals and all this kind of stuff, check on the kid and make sure they're okay. But even in dependency court, so the places where someone is going to end up if there are mental health issues, so let's catalog those. Usually the first place, if they're young, as a juvenile, is juvenile court, because they commit a criminal act. So they show up there. What services do they get? Minimal at best. They're trying to clear out the case for the most part, because we're on a very short cycle in juvenile court. The cases aren't supposed to be around long. And depending upon what the charge is and such, you know, inside of 4, 5, 6 months, that case is gone and it's finished. But you can have the first place psychological issues show up is there. Another one that David and I were alluding to is if there is abuse, the way you get into dependency court, which is a very specialized court, which is reserved under Chapter 39 for three types of cases: abuse, abandonment, or neglect. I'm going to be there tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. Abuse, abandonment, or neglect. When you come in there.
Of minors, I'm assuming, right?
Of minors, okay. Of course, of minors. You have I call it going into the pit. DCF is in there, the guardian ad litem is in there, but who's running the show? DCF. You know, David, just so you know, and I meant to say this before, when I was down at the conference, just like you were, I was sitting with two female judges from Fort Myers and from Naples. You know what they told me when I mentioned DCF? I told them about the Periwinkle case. They said, not a surprise. We have no control over DCF. We don't know what to do with them. These are two judges. Now, DCF, when I say they just kind of run rampant and do their own thing here, it always seems to work out. And that's why I was pointing it out in this case is that 2016, this is 2018. We know things didn't get better in the past couple of years, but it's amazing. They came out and released confidential reports. The reason they did it was they didn't want to look like they were holding back information, but the information they released, it makes me wonder yet again, what is it that they're looking at? Because if they couldn't figure this out, if they couldn't figure that out, who's looking after Florida's children? DCF is. We have a caller, I believe.
Yeah, Lauren's holding right now and I believe has a question on mental health. Hi, Lauren. Welcome to the Lawyer's Edge. Are you there?
Oh, hi. Hey. Yes, I'm here. I wanted to call in and talk about not necessarily the laws of mental health, but specifically my experience with veterans' mental health. My husband has severe PTSD and was actually at Walter Reed. But I think something that we also need to discuss is allowing family members to speak to psychiatry and psychology on behalf of their, you know, spouse or children or something like that. Because when he was going through everything he was going through, nobody would talk to me. So he would be doing one thing and I was seeing something different. And even with my medical power of attorney, they still wouldn't talk to me and hear what I had to say.
Well, there has to be a mechanism. I know in family law court, when we have the psychological evaluations of the parents, when we fill out the questionnaires, we can provide witnesses to the psychologist. And whether the psychologist talks to those witnesses or not, and it's trying to give the psychologist an outside perspective of what other people are dealing with or what they see. And then they talk to the client and they write their report. When it comes to PTSD issues with the military, I'm sure they have a totally different criteria. But the system, the reason the system is, I think the system is broke, is because you have so much, and I think there's a lot of money going to the system. I don't know the budget, but no one's talking and working together. So you have these spokes that are of these cogs, like you know, on a bike or a machine, and they're not linking up. They're not working together, right. And they're missing each other. So when you get this issue that Robert has showed us on this report, where DCF has released this report, and everybody here, you know, Monday morning quarterback saying, oh, it's so obvious, and maybe it is. I'm not here. I'm not analyzing this case because I am not qualified to analyze that case. But if you Monday morning quarterback it, sure, it is so clear and obvious that everybody missed the mark on this case.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get in real time, and I agree with Robert, DCF can improve. Our dependency court here in Fort Duval County with Judge Gooding, he has a fabulous passion for DCF. But does a courthouse, does a dependency courtroom make or fix children or fix parents? No. That is a product of the mental health professionals, the classes, the one-on-ones that these parents and these children go through.
Yep. But Lauren, let me add this. Lauren, you hit the nail right on the head. What happens is, it's so frustrating. You're trying to provide information to the so-called experts, which includes DCF. You know what I find the problem is? 3/4 of the time, and this is what you were hitting, you're in a position to have the best observation and the best information. No one wants to hear what you have to say. It's like this.
Absolutely.
Give us the person. I always say this about Mayo, too. They're interested in the patient, of course. But they're interested in the clinical information to go into their dark room and do their thing. But oftentimes when it comes to you, you're the one in the street. You're the one having to manage a person 24 hours a day. And you're trying to give information to give input for triage. And what you frequently are going to find is you're dismissed, not heard. They tell you what you're talking about is not what's real. And then they walk off and they treat a part of him or her that they're interested in treating. The other part gets left it gets undiagnosed or it gets left hanging out there.
And probably the most significant part, because it's the everyday behavior.
Sure.
That is the more troubling, because we can take, you know, the MMPIs, all these different psychological tests, and they can be indicators of a psychological issue, and those indicators can be treated.
That's just a the MMPI is just right. A diagnostic tool.
But off that, we can treat based on that stuff, but it's missing the bigger everyday issues that everybody else is seeing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Please call us at 222-TALK. We're here for you, but the Lawyer's Edge, we're going to continue with this topic. We got a lot to discuss. Please call us at 222-TALK. That is 222-TALK. You're listening to the Lawyer's Edge.
A law firm dedicated to helping families. A law firm dedicated to you. The law firm of Robert J. Slama.
Hi, I'm Robert Slama, and I want to be your family's attorney. For over 17 years, I've assisted the Jacksonville community by providing a full-service law firm for families, not the rich and powerful, but for everyday families like yours. Since 1998, I have handled some of the most complicated cases in Jacksonville, including Brenton Butler, and more recently, the jury verdict in Jermaine DeBose. Whether it's family law, including divorce, custody, or bankruptcy, juvenile law, personal injury, probate, civil rights, or not-for-profit and churches, I'm dedicated to helping your family with your legal needs. I'm Robert Slama, and I want to be your family's attorney. Call me anytime. My number is 904-296-1050, or you may text me at 838-8607. The law firm of Robert J. Slama.
Welcome back to the Lawyer's Edge. Roger Henderson here with Robert Slama and David Trotty talking about legal issues. If you've got a question or comment, feel free to call in at 904-222-TALK, 904-222-8255. And that is the number. And Robert, very generous today to the best caller that comes in based upon his own unilateral observation. It will be a $50 gift card to Costco. And right Absolutely. Now, Lauren is in the lead, so we'll see.
Lauren is up. It's my favorite store, by the way, Costco. Everything I need comes out of that store.
Everything?
Everything.
Okay.
Pretty much.
You know, you're right. Pretty much everything.
Well, they're our next sponsor, by the way. No, I'm just kidding.
I'd love them to, because I tell you, Costco, the chicken, and this is an aside, but if you don't buy it for my life cycle revolves around the $4 Costco chicken. It's food, then it goes into the Sunday soup, yeah. And it's the snacks during the week. So yeah. And watching football, hey, whatever.
But before we get back on this topic, uh-huh. as veterans, I want to make sure we understand tonight at 7 o'clock on San Juan Avenue at the American Legion 48 building is the Veteran Council of Duval County's monthly meeting. And this Saturday at 10:30 at the Convention Center, it's a one-time change from the auditorium downtown, but at the Convention Center at 10:30 to 1 o'clock is the Vets for Vets meeting. If you're a veteran out there listening, please get there. It's a free lunch. Help yourself. It's free. A lot of good information, but please be there. And they deal with mental health issues down there. A lot of times the Veterans Court is down there. Talk to those guys. There's other services down there. Please come out this Saturday at 10:30.
And you know what? Anyone listening who's a lawyer, and David and I hadn't made this pitch yet, one of my questions or one of my observations was going to be, and a letter to the Florida Bar president is, encouraging, how much CLE have you seen on mental health issues? Answer, none. Very little. Lawyers have to do a significant number of hours each year, and we can do above and beyond. The hours that can be done in the community for mental health issues and also for vets, this would be a place for lawyers to go also to help out, because people need it. And the cost oftentimes, I mean, mental health issues are difficult. Don't get me wrong. The most difficult cases I handle, it's one thing handling someone going through a stressful time where there's going to be issues anyway. When you add the mental health issues to it and then down the road to the children, what the parents are doing today, and that's why I get sick to my stomach when I hear this. I used to hear some judges say this. Kids are resilient. All he needs is a good swift kick, something like that, or the smack. Truth be told, kids are all different. To say that Roger's like David and David's like me, we're similar, but we're not alike. We're all different.
Well, Roger and I are very similar.
Well,
yeah.
Really?
We talked yesterday about that.
You're acknowledging that in public? I'm sorry.
Listen, let me ask
you something. You're a brave man.
Robert, let me ask you something.
Yes.
Corporal punishment.
Corporal.
Yes or no? Not talking about step-parents. I'm talking about the biological parents. Yes or no?
It's an individual choice for me, I think.
You're on cross-examination here. Yes or no?
My approach is to avoid it. I think I've used it, if anything, once.
All right. When you were a child, corporal punishment, yes or no?
You know what's funny? My mom used to get out the wooden spoon.
I'm just really asking you. Were you subject to corporal punishment?
With a wooden spoon from my mother, which she never hit me. She just pulled it out and pointed it. My dad was a cop. And when he came in at night, what I got was this. It was a talk. My mom would go, wait until your dad comes home. I'm in bed. My dad would come in. And what he would say did everything for me, but he never touched me. So corporal punishment wasn't used on me.
All right.
And I didn't use it.
So let's go into the school.
Sure.
Corporal punishment, yes or no?
Administered by the teacher, I guess?
Teacher, dean, vice principal, whoever is designating who has proper training to administer corporal
community
punishment.
Community resource officer.
I like that. Community resource officer.
When we were kids, it was the gym coach, and I got swatted a couple of times.
Did it work?
It got my attention.
It got your attention.
It sure did.
It woke you up a little bit, right?
But I didn't have mental health issues. That's what I'm trying to say. We're mixing apples and oranges.
Well,
if you swap the kid with mental health issues, he's going to go straight? No.
Again, well, I'm not a psychologist, and I don't have any training in mental health issues whatsoever. You know, maybe the small tad that we touched on in my education degree, you know. But are you saying that mental health issues is genetic?
No.
Okay, so. Okay.
No,
just stop there.
It can be.
I think it can be.
Oh, okay, it can be. A lot of things can be genetic. But we don't know if you're predisposed at birth or not for mental health issues. I think in some of those children, we can really see it as they're coming up, whether you're an intact marriage or not an intact family. When do you think children develop the most mental health issues if they weren't predisposed at birth?
Teen years, of course.
Okay, but what events, what type of, just give me, I'm not saying there's a science
traumatic
behind
events.
This.
Okay. A death of a brother. Seeing a shooting, I represented a kid.
Just go down a list.
Yeah, I am. I was representing a kid who came out and he had on his jumpsuit. Rest in peace 3 times. I asked him what that was all about. I said he looked like he was walking death. He goes, those are 3 of my closest friends who were dead. So these kids now dealing with shootings and killings of their own kids their age, which didn't happen when I was a kid.
So we got PTSD issues.
Of course. Okay. Plus some. Okay. And a psychotic break. That can happen in teenagers somewhere between the ages of, say, 16 and 20, I think 21, 22, somewhere in there, where they end up with an episode, and I've represented those people, those kids.
But you're not – I want a list. Give me a list. So we have
– Abuse and neglect.
Abuse from
– The parents.
The parents, okay.
Step-parent.
Okay. Especially sexual abuse, I would imagine.
Absolutely, which is actually leading to, as I keep saying.
It could be sexual abuse, physical abuse.
Violence in women abuse? Is on the rise, and it's because of abuse to women caused by sexual assault and other things.
Okay, so we have a PTSD issue being around significant life-altering events, whether it's a car wreck, seeing someone die, these school shootings, the parent coming home from war.
Suicide, a close relative who commits suicide.
All right, so... We have,
and then of course we can't forget drug
genetic.
Abuse.
Drug abuse, which is what they call a induced psychotic induced event, which can be the result of drugs.
Which a lot of time the drugs, you know, you're not putting a 3-year-old in front of drugs, but it's the environment the child's around that exposes this child to drug usage.
Right.
And again, maybe there's some predisposition from the parents being on drugs when the child's pregnant, and yada yada. Again, I'm not qualified to talk about those issues.
Depression, bipolar, some that is organic, schizophrenia.
Right. So we can make a checklist and we can give it to every parent, put it on the fridge. Okay, in invisible ink so the kids can't see it. And as you get these check marks that you're observing and you're a intact family and you have little Johnny or little Susie dealing with these issues. Like death of a family member that they're really close to. Are we getting these kids the necessary mental health care at that time, even if the child hasn't displayed any signs of mental health issues? Do we need to make sure, say their brother died in a car crash and they were in the car? Do we need to have a program that says if that happens, these kids need to go?
Well, but David, listen to what you're saying. Is that, I mean, this whole issue, that's going to be based on Roger having insurance, or someone like, since you two are very similar, someone like Roger having insurance. That's not through the court system. My point is, the kid, the children, the family.
Once they're in the court system, Robert, it's too late.
No, I understand. I'm saying is, you and I can't solve today that many people don't have insurance. This is the argument and the problem with our current state of insurance. And if you don't have insurance, do you know how many people, when I refer them out for the child to get counseling, usually with Mercedes McGowan, and they go, these people don't work for free, they can't afford it, and if they don't have insurance and they can't get it through their insurance. Now, some people have good insurance and at work for themselves, they have EAP. At least they can see an EAP counselor. Other folks don't have it. So what happens? It goes unnoticed. So it doesn't get handled.
So mental health facilities. So instead of the jail, we have a mental health ward.
It's called the Baker Act, but that only applies when?
Well, yeah, but that's a little three-day assessment. We have the Marshman's Act as well.
Yep.
But I'm talking about, let's say mom and dad or grandparents or somebody recognizes an issue. You know, little Johnny wrote on Facebook that he's going to do A, B, and C. Grandma turns him in. A couple examples this last couple days. Grandma turns him in, and they say, yeah, this guy did do this. This guy does have some issues.
Right.
Where do you put him?
That's what I'm saying. You don't. You either. This is the problem. That's why.
I'm asking, are you saying that we need to facilitate funding for a mental health prison?
Did you say prison?
Ward. What? Facility.
Aside from a Baker Act where they are an imminent threat, which is what lands you ultimately into that area of being, quote, Baker Acted. Don't forget the stigma also, but what I'm trying to say is that how this normally should go, you go see your pediatrician, you have insurance, they've got to have, remember what I said in the beginning, this is why I said
The biggest issue, there's no insurance and no funding.
But the most serious and significant event that we have to figure out, remember I said that 1 in 7 Americans is on some sort of medication or has some sort of mental health issue?
Psychotropic.
Pretty much. It's this. Or undiagnosed. One in seven is what they know. My point is, when we're talking about the mental health in courts, if you know 1 in 7 has a problem, how often then are we actually dealing with this in the courts when we know that on the outside 1 in 7 has a problem? And so it's got to come through the system. And it does. It rarely gets dealt with there. So here's how it happens under the example that you gave. Nothing happens. You wait until he commits a criminal act. He gets in the criminal justice system, usually as a juvenile, and then they look there for magic, and it doesn't happen.
But again, you're on the other side.
I'm trying to be on your side, but we can't change.
I'm not talking about adversarial side.
Right.
I'm talking about you're on the other side of the incident.
That's right.
I'm talking about little Johnny's 8 years old, and he's carving stuff in his desk about Mary and Susie. And there are significant issues.
Cruelty to animals. He's depressed.
Whatever the situation is. So there's no money to get this child properly treated. The guidance counselors are limited. The schools are limited. They've exhausted those resources. Now the child's becoming violent. We have a serious problem in the United States. And blaming the right or the left isn't going to fix it.
I agree.
Blaming an inanimate object isn't going to fix it.
You've heard the saying that there is a simple and easy solution to every complicated problem, and it's almost always wrong. That's what's going on. You can point to an instrumentality and say, it's the obvious thing. It's the obvious problem. But it's not. When you start here and you look into the history and how we got here, I understand there's a lot of people, their viewpoint is, look, you raise your kids, I don't care. Just make sure when they're 18 that they're fit for society.
But wow, but what a show.
Yeah.
You know, it's a heavy issue. Maybe we can track into this show next week. But, Robert?
Please call us at 222-TALK.
We're out of time.
I know. No, I want to. You can call. I'll stick around for a little bit afterwards, but call us, please.